Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Emhauser. You can find me pretty much everywhere on social media at Hawk Blogger. And it is a Monday morning, spring break for a number of us who still have kids in school. And so warning from the start, my son's still sleeping upstairs. And if he decides to wake up during this episode, I will have to get up and make sure he gets situated before I come back. So just a fair warning, I may get interrupted during the show, but hopefully he decides to sleep in and we get this whole show in uninterrupted. Good reminder, if you haven't already, give the show a like, click subscribe, and give it a 5-star rating wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else. Just take 1 second. We've actually raised the Apple Podcast score all the way to from 4.3 to 4.4. Would love to get that even higher. If just 50 of you, 100 of you, go there and quickly rate the show, give it a 5-star review, that would be super helpful. So really, really appreciate it. My schedule this week, just as a programming note, will be a little bit harder to predict because of my son's spring break and just making sure I'm available where needed. I am the designated house spouse, with my job being a little bit more able to be flexible than my wife's full-time job. So just keep an eye on that. Although tomorrow I can tell you we have the return of the one, the only Dane Brugler. And that will be at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So a little bit later than normal, but Dane Brugler will be on. This is the week that the Beast is released. His massive draft guide. Cannot wait to talk to Dane about that tomorrow. Best draft analyst in the biz, as far as I'm concerned. Dane and I've been texting back and forth about various Seahawks needs and scenarios. So looking forward to catching up with Dane tomorrow. Also, quick apologies. I'm a little bit under the weather, so my voice is as good as it's going to be. I'm a little congested. Hopefully it's not too much of a problem for all of you, but good to see you all as we join together on this Monday. So the focus of this episode is going to be on tradebacks from the first round, from this 18th pick in the first round for the Seahawks. And this is something that we talk about as an ideal. We've talked about it as an ideal. I also talked about it with John Schneider at the owners meeting, and he acknowledged they just like tradebacks don't happen that often anymore, or at least when they do, they don't get a lot in return. And he just said it was a bummer, and that it's really changed a lot over the last few years. I've played that sound for you before. I don't think I'll play it again today, but that's essentially what he said. But there are still trades that get made. In fact, a number of them got made last year. I'm going to go through with you draft day trades that got made last year in the first round, what the returns were, what the relative value was. I'm going to use a trade value chart. I'm going to talk you through that, how it works. And then I'm also going to give you 5 different realistic trade scenarios for the Seahawks to trade back, using those trades from just last year as a basis to prove that these are realistic scenarios. Also, as a bonus, I'm going to give you some information that I learned as a process for preparing for today's show, which is roughly what's the discount you get for trading a future draft pick. Found out a little bit about that as I looked for some information and found some good research that had been done, and I'll share that with you as well. Before we get into the meat of the show there are a couple stories that are worth touching on for the Seahawks. I might touch on some of these more in another episode, but the first is a little bit of news. Jordan Schultz reported this morning that Shaquille Griffin, the cornerback, former Seahawks third round pick, is making a visit to Seattle. And he's a free agent. He played for the Vikings last year. He played for Houston and Carolina the year before that. He had been in Jacksonville for a couple years before that. Shaquille Griffin is still just 29 years old. He's about to turn 30 in July. And Shaquille Griffin was never a player that I think any of us were down on. I think Shaquille Griffin as a cornerback is a, I think, a legitimate starting cornerback in the NFL. His big issue had always been that he does not locate the football. He's not somebody that is going to turn and find the ball, which has led to relatively few pass breakups, relatively few interceptions, relative to what I think are pretty decent cover skills. He's just not great at locating the football. He has been graded, if you're curious, from a PFF perspective, as essentially a league average corner. His grade last year overall was 63.7. His coverage grade was 61.6. His run defense grade, 71.7. So that's a little bit better. His grade the year before, in 2023, 67 overall, 67 coverage grade. So that's a little bit better. Again, 70 gets you to above average starter. 60 is average starter. And then the year before that, he was 61.8 in Jacksonville and 61.9 as a coverage grade. His best year in the last 4 years was with Jacksonville in 2021, where he had a 72 grade that year. He also had a 71 coverage grade. So at his best, at least in the recent history, he has been an above average corner. He has never had more than 3 interceptions in a season. In his last four years, has a combined 3 interceptions. He had 2 last year. I think worth noting that he had a passer rating surrendered of 76.2 last year, which is not bad, and 82.5 the year before. Again, not bad. So what does this mean? I think the Seahawks, they still have cap space. They can spend it how they like. And if they think Shaquille Griffin is a guy that can help deepen their cornerback room and reduce their need in the draft to potentially reach for another corner, it makes sense. And keep in mind, Artie Burns was a guy that they really liked, and he signed down in Florida. So he is no longer with the Seahawks. He's that veteran corner. Shaquille Griffin could be a guy that comes in and competes with Josh Jobe. I think that would make sense. And when I asked Mike McDonald about the cornerback room in West Palm at the owners meeting, he admitted that they wanted to add more competition to that spot. So I think it all makes sense. I think it would be a solid signing. I don't think it's a harbinger of anything more than that. I know there's some people that are like, oh, does this mean that they're going to trade Reek Woolen? I don't think it means that. I don't think Shaquille Griffin is good enough to warrant that kind of conversation. Now, if they draft a really good corner who ends up working out, I think it could definitely mean that they don't re-sign or extend Reek Woolen. But realistically, this is going to be probably a one-year deal if they do sign Shaquille Griffin. It'll be a short deal. So I don't think it has much of an implication for Reek Woolen. Okay, so that's one bit of news. The other bit of news, and this is probably what some people would like me to spend the whole episode talking about, and some people would like me to not mention at all. It is that Albert Breer wrote an article that just was published this morning about Geno Smith. And in this article, a few things are revealed. If you thought Geno Smith and his camp had actually counteroffered and that John Schneider was not being truthful when he said they didn't receive a counter, you have no leg to stand on. Geno Smith, in this article, acknowledges that they did not counter the offer that the Seahawks made. And it also has been confirmed that the money was not that different between what the Seahawks offered and what Geno Smith got from Vegas. What was the primary difference? The Seahawks would not really budge, as they haven't with other players, on guarantees past year one of a deal. The Raiders guaranteed, I want to make sure I got the right number here. I want to say it was like 16 or 18 million. Let me find this really quickly. Sorry, guys. Scrolling in as we go. Guaranteed. Okay, 18 and a half million guaranteed in 2026. This was listed by Albert Breer as, quote, perhaps the most important nuance to the deal was the $18.5 million for 2026 that was fully guaranteed the minute Smith signed the contract, showing that the Raiders view this as more than just a one-year stopgap. So, there's more to this article. Probably get into it more, maybe a little bit tomorrow. But I think in general, Geno Smith was pretty respectful in this article. He did not lob a lot of grenades at Seattle. He said, Seattle is a great situation for me. He thinks he found something maybe even better. He's allowed to feel that way. He mentioned that he felt like he was looking for more of a commitment from the Seahawks, and that the conversation that he had with John Schneider before last season left him feeling like he maybe wasn't part of their future plans, and that they wanted to stick with the young core and that they were looking probably to move on at some point. And Smith said, I just felt like there was a disconnect there. So there are going to be people that use this as ammunition to say, see, John Schneider pushed Geno out. There are going to be people that use this as ammunition to say, see, Geno Smith pushed his way out. And you know what? You're both sides are correct to some extent. It takes two sides to sign a deal, two sets of signatures. It takes two folks, in this case, to not agree to a deal and to move on. And I think it's that simple. What Geno Smith was looking for, the Seahawks weren't ready to commit to. And what the Seahawks were looking for from Geno, Geno was not looking to commit to. So they made a different decision. It is what it is. Talked about the fact that he talked with Pete Carroll nearly every day at times last year. He did say nice things about Mike McDonald. He didn't throw any parting shots, which was nice of him to do. But the reality of Pete Carroll probably tampering and probably illegally tampering at some point with Geno Smith is real. Doesn't mean that anything's going to come of it. I don't think it's nefarious. It just is what it is. Relationships drive deals. And there's a very strong bond there. I think the point Breer made about Chip Kelly being the OC there also makes it really appealing for Geno Smith. As he talks about in the article, his cousin, Jeremiah Smith, who is the star freshman last year for the Ohio State Buckeyes, under Chip Kelly. Geno Smith spent a fair amount of time in and around that Ohio State team, has had prior relationships with Chip Kelly, respects him as a play caller and the innovations that he brings on that side of the ball. I kind of leave this and I'm like, I'm happy for Geno Smith. He seems very excited about this new beginning. Spent time with Tom Brady. He's texting Max Crosby all the time about the way they want to lead. He's excited to be back with Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll's excited to have him. Good for them. Like, good for them. And if the Seahawks really, really wanted Geno Smith here, they would have done things differently. And I think they have to own that. This is not a situation where Geno Smith just forced his way out. The Seahawks, you go back to last year, I mentioned it then, the Seahawks talked more about Drew Lock. Ryan Grubb, Mike McDonald, John Schneider talked more in the media about Drew Lock than they did about Geno Smith. It got to the point where Geno Smith was blowing up on social media, on Twitter, angry about some of the things that people were saying. It was not handled particularly delicately. It was very stark contrast to what we saw this offseason, where Mike McDonald was way out there about how much they wanted Geno Smith back and why we're even talking about this. It's, of course, he's going to be back. John Schneider was also bullish on Geno Smith. Clint Kubiak was bullish on Geno Smith. So this is very different. It's very different. I think they demonstrated an awareness of where they needed to change and need to woo this guy back. They failed in that regard. I also don't think that they failed in the sense that if they really wanted him here, they would have found another way to entice him to stay. So that's my initial take. I'll probably have some more to say about it. We might talk about it more another time. But those are the two pieces of news that I wanted to at least touch on before we get into the meat of the show, which are trade scenarios. And let's talk about them. Let's talk about trade scenarios. If you haven't already, give the show a like, click subscribe, and give the show a 5-star review. If you want ad-free audio versions of this show, all you got to do is sign up at patreon.com/hawkblogger. Ad-free audio there every day, almost immediately following the show. So easy thing to do. Also, it gets you access to the Discord channel, where also YouTube members, Club Level and Higher, also are in that Discord channel. We've got hundreds of folks in there having conversations about the Seahawks all the time. So make sure you check that out. All right, so let's get to this conversation about trading back. Last year, there were five deals, at least that I could find, that happened on draft day. I'm going to stick with deals that happened on draft day because I think it's unlikely that John Schneider would trade away from the 18th pick before the draft. I don't think that's how he will roll. I will share some of the pre-draft trades. There was a pre-draft trade last year where the Broncos got Zach Wilson and a 7th-round pick for a 6th-round pick from the Jets. The Titans traded a 7th-round pick for Leroy Watson, an offensive tackle. Maybe the biggest pre-draft day trade or couple of them. Stephon Diggs was traded for a 6th-round pick with a 6th-round pick and a 5th-round pick, and the Bills got a 2nd-round pick. Legarius Sneed, the corner, was traded plus a 7th-round pick from the Chiefs to the Titans for a 7th and a 3rd. I'm not going to go through all these. These are kind of like what the Seahawks have already done with Geno Smith and DK Metcalf, right? So in that sense, they've made pre-draft day trades. That is a little different than trading away their draft picks, okay? And especially trading back in the first round. So I'm going to go through with you the five trades that happened for the first round in 2024. I'm also going to tell you, I'm going to use a draft trade chart, and there's all sorts of different ones out there. Jimmy Johnson kind of started this. That one is considered kind of outdated. The one that I've kind of settled on is the Rich Hill trade value chart. You can look it up if you'd like. You can compare it. There's the Fitzgerald Spielberger trade value chart. There's, I think, Ben Baldwin has a trade chart out there. I think there's a number of different ones. I find the Rich Hill one to be most commonly close to even when I do the trade scores, which for me indicates it's the closest to what teams are doing. Because if you do a trade value chart and you use their values to assign who won the trade, and it's constantly a massive win one way or the other, that's unlikely that teams are commonly ripping each other off. So Rich Hill's chart seems most accurate to me. It's not perfect, but it's the one I'm going to use. So let's start from the highest pick and work our way down. What we had was the Vikings, and the Vikings, for what it's worth, they're going to come up later. They made two trades to move up. They traded up twice. Interesting to note which teams were willing and interested to trade up. Got to mute so I can cough. 1 second. All right. Vikings made their first trade up when they traded their 11th pick overall plus the 129th pick, which is a fourth round pick, and their 157th pick, which is a fifth round pick. So they traded a 1, a 4, and a 5 to get the Jets' 10th pick, as well as a 6th round pick, pick 203. So again, they moved up one spot from 11 to 10. And in order to do that, they gave up a 4th round pick and a 5th round pick and got back a 6th round pick. When I apply the trade value chart, the Rich Hill trade value chart, to that, there is an 11.8 point difference. And to give you an idea what 11.8 points means, 11.8 points is equivalent to the 198th pick in the draft, a 6th round pick. So what does that mean? It means that in this case, the Jets got the equivalent of a 6th round pick for moving back one spot. I'm going to say that again just to make sure you got the idea. So when there's a surplus, in this case, 11.8 points surplus goes to the Jets, who traded back, I can then look at the trade value chart and say, well, what's 11.8 points worth in the trade value chart? Well, that ends up being the 198th pick, which is a kind of mid 6th round pick. That's how you can kind of assess. It's a very, like, having a trade that's within 20 points is pretty darn even. And it's a good example of, they traded up for a quarterback. They didn't get that much, like, they didn't give up that much to do it in reality. All right. So that's one example. All right. Moving up one spot pretty early in the first round, pretty even. Again, 11.8 points difference. Next trade, also the Vikings. By the way, that was the trade the Vikings made to pick J.J. McCarthy. And the Jets ended up picking Olu Fashanu at pick 11. Why would the Jets do that? Because they weren't going to take J.J. McCarthy, and they knew they'd still get the same guy that they wanted to take at 10. So why not? Even if you're not getting that much in return, get something, get an extra player or two, and get some value. Okay. Next, Vikings trade up again. Vikings moved up from pick 23. Sorry, excuse me. Let me make sure I've got this right. Yes, okay. Vikings move up from pick 23 in the first round to pick 17. This is the pick after the Seahawks, by the way. And pay attention to this one, because this is a team trading back from 17. The Seahawks have the 18th pick. Pretty close. So the Vikings got pick 17. In order to get pick 17, they gave up pick 23, pick 167, which is a fifth round pick. So they gave up a first and a fifth, But then here's the kicker, and this is where it gets a little complicated. They also gave up a 2025 third round pick and fourth round pick. Okay? So they traded a 1, a 5, and a future 3 and a 4 in order to make this deal. So that sent me on a little bit of an adventure to do some reading and finding out how do you account for future picks. And I will not read you the full article, but there was a good article written by Joseph Hefner in April of last year, where he went through, he's a data scientist, and he kind of looked to see what's the actual discount. And he gets to a more specific analysis, like for each round, there's maybe a different discount used. I'm not gonna bore you with that. You might be interested in that, but we won't talk about it for now. You can go find the article. I think it's kcsn.com, kcsn.com. Look up trade charts and future discounts and you'll find the article. So overall, he comes to the conclusion that 55% discount is applied to future picks based on how teams have valued them and used them in the past. So I used that calculation as a discount, and I used basically the middle of the round, whatever the value of a mid third round pick would be. In this case, a middle third round pick roughly is worth about 180 points. A mid fourth round pick is worth about 54, 55 points. So what I did is I went through and I said, okay, let's apply a 55% discount to the round 3 and the round 4 future picks for the Vikings. And what you get, actually, the Vikings, the Jaguars who traded back, actually lost 36 points of value. So believe it or not, pick 17 was more valuable than pick 23 plus a fifth round pick plus a future third and fourth. That's how much discounts apply to future picks. I would take that trade potentially if I'm a Seahawk front office member. But it is essentially in that year, you're going from having the 17th pick to having the 23rd pick and just picking up a fifth. You don't really get the benefit of this deal until the following year. That's a little bit harder of a move to make, but if you are in a secure position, it's a pretty damn good one to make in some cases. But in this case, at least by the trade value chart, it was not a good deal. Not a good deal for the Jaguars. It was a great deal for the Vikings. And to give you an idea, 36.5 points is worth the 139th pick. That's the top pick of the fifth round, at least this year. So what that means is the Jaguars essentially gave up the value of a fifth round pick in order to move back from 17 to 23. So that's not generally what you want to do. If you're curious, the Vikings used that pick to pick Dallas Turner. The Jaguars used their pick that they traded back to get Brian Thomas. And then they drafted a running back, Keelan Robinson, in the fifth round. But now they have the Vikings' third and fourth round picks this year, which unfortunately for the Jaguars are pretty low because the Vikings won 14 games. So, again, trading back from 17 got you pick 23. That's six picks back, plus a fifth, plus a future third and fourth. And you had to give up 36 points of value to do it. All right. So that's trade two. Trade three. There's five of these trades. I'm going to go through these. Hopefully you guys are picking this up, following along. Trade three. Trade three involves the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions moved up from pick 29 to pick 24. In order to do that, they gave up a third round pick, pick 73. And they also got back a seventh round pick. So the Cowboys gave them pick 24 and a seventh round pick in 2025. Sorry, I should be clear. They gave up a seventh. The Cowboys gave up a future seventh round pick, which is not worth much, in order to get back picks 29 and 73, a first and a third. The Lions used that pick to pick Terry Arnold at 24. The Cowboys used their picks to take Tyler Guyton and Cooper Beebe, a guy that the Seahawks wanted, by the way, in that third round. And this was a pretty massive, this was the biggest one-sided deal of all of them. The Cowboys got a 124-point surplus for trading back from 24. 124 points. That is a massive surplus. That is the equivalent of the 94th pick overall. That's a third-round pick. So they got basically exactly what you'd think. They like it, you don't have to read more into this. They got a third round pick for being willing to move down five spots. But the point here is that it's like an additional third round pick. That's that's the amount of value they got. That's how much more valuable adding the pick that they got was than sticking at 24. So this was the most one-sided deal. Again, picks 24 and a future seventh round pick for picks 29 and 73. So a first and a third for a first and a seventh. That would be a great deal if you could get something like that. Last two deals. The Chiefs and the Bills. The Bills are involved in both of these. In this case, the Chiefs trading up for Xavier Worthy. They traded up from pick 32 to pick 28, so four spots. In order to do that, the Chiefs gave up a third round pick, pick 95, and a seventh round pick, 221. So they gave up 32, 95, 221, and what they got back, so they gave up a first, a third, and a seventh. What they got back was pick 28. They moved up four spots, a fourth round pick, and a seventh. So they essentially, the Bills got to exchange a third for a fourth. They moved up from pick 133 to pick 190, pick from 133 to 95. And they moved up from pick 248 in the seventh to pick 221 in the seventh. So they moved up from the fourth to the third and from the seventh late to the seventh earlier. And in order to do that, they moved back four spots in the first round. So this is a pretty even deal for what it's worth. There's just a negative 8.2 differential, meaning that the Bills actually lost this trade by a little bit. They lost value by moving back, but not a lot. 8.2 points is not a lot. So that's the fourth trade. The fifth and final trade was the Bills trading back again, trading back twice. Bills traded back from pick 32, one spot, to pick 33. And in order to do that, the Panthers gave them a fifth round pick in exchange for a sixth round pick. So they swapped a fifth for a sixth, which was pick 200 for pick 141. So that's a 60 spot jump for moving back one spot from 32 to 33. And that, in that case, the Bills picked up 14.5 points in trade value. That's equivalent to like a sixth round pick. So those are the five deals. In case you're curious about that one, that's the pick the Bills used on Keon Coleman, the Panthers used on Xavier Legette. That's how that played out. So let's talk about what would be some realistic trades for the Seahawks, okay? Some realistic trades for the Seahawks. It is, if we're looking at these values, what did I tell you the values difference were? 14.5, negative 8.2, 124, a bit of an outlier there, negative 36.7, and 11.8. So four of the five deals that were made last year using Rich Hill's trade value chart were within 40 points. Three of the five were within 15 points. So I tried to come up with deals that kind of honored that level of similarity. And the first deal I came up with, which I think can make some sense, is the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh doing some deals with John Schneider. And what this would mean is the Seahawks would move back four picks. They would move back from pick 18 to pick 22. And in order to do that, the Chargers would include their third round pick, which is pick 86. The Seahawks would have to give up a fifth round pick, pick 172, to make this a more even deal. Seahawks would trade back from 18 to 22. They'd get pick 86, a third round pick, and they'd give up a fifth round pick, pick 172. Remember, they have another fifth round pick, pick 175. That ends up with a 17.4 surplus for the Seahawks. So not outlandish, definitely within the realm. And what that would mean is the Seahawks would then have six picks within the first 92. They'd have, if I go back and highlight the Seahawks picks, the Seahawks would have 82, 86, and 92 in the third round. So they'd have three third round picks, two second round picks, and they'd still have a first round pick at 22. I think that's a hell of a trade. And I think one of the reasons it's also a smart trade is the Chargers are not going to be a team that takes offensive line. They have spent in free agency on Mekhi Becton. They've got some other like guys in place on the offensive line. I don't think that they're going to spend another pick in the first round on offensive line. So you're also moving a team in front of you that's not necessarily going to take the guy that you want. Now, one of the other teams in between might, but the team you're trading for probably isn't going to take your guy. So I think that Chargers deal is a realistic one. Again, 22 and 86. So a first, move back four spots and you pick up a third round pick. And all you have to do is give up pick 172, a fifth round pick, and move back four spots. So I think that's a realistic trade. Second realistic trade. I've got six realistic trades for you. That's trade number one. Trade number two, the Vikings. Vikings showed last year they've been aggressive. Now this year it's a little harder because, as I told you, they traded away their third and fourth round picks this year to move up to draft Dallas Turner when they made the trade with the Jags. But there is a trade here that I think could make sense. And given that the Vikings have been aggressive in moving around the draft board, I thought it was warranted to keep them in this. The Vikings have picked 24 in the first round. In order to move up to pick 18, they would have to give up their third round pick, pick 97, and their fifth round pick, 139. That would mean the Seahawks in this case would actually lose 11.5 points of value, but again, a relatively even deal. In this case, the Seahawks would move back six spots. They would gain a third round and a fifth round pick. The third round pick would pick 97. So in that case, they would have 82, 92, and 97. I don't believe they'd use all of these picks that they'd accumulate, but they would then be able to really move around the draft board in day two. Like, they'd have even more ammunition to do that. So I don't think this is crazy. I also don't think it's the most likely, because it would leave the Vikings with basically no other draft picks the rest of the draft. Excuse me while I blow my nose. All right. So that's realistic trade number two. Realistic trade number three. The Broncos. Broncos have pick 20. So this is just trading back two spots. And the Broncos, I could absolutely see, if Colston Loveland is sitting there, if there's a player that they really like, maybe it's O'Marrion Hampton, maybe there's a running back that they really like that's sitting there, moving up two spots to get him. This trade is perfect, at least by the Rich Hill scenario. It literally has exactly even value. 0 point plus or minus. The Seahawks would give up pick 18. They'd move back two spots and they'd pick up a fourth round pick, pick 122. That is an exactly even trade. And that would give them a chance. Like, they're not, maybe they don't care about picking that tight end. Maybe they don't care about picking the, they certainly wouldn't care about picking the running back. And that would give the Seahawks 2 second-round picks, 2 third-round picks, and 2 fourth-round picks. They'd have 122 and 137 in the fourth round. And I think that would give them a chance again to really move around the board on day two, should they choose to do that. So that's another realistic one. The Seahawks just moved back two picks. They could probably still get the guy that they're looking for. And they pick up a fourth round pick in the process. Okay, so that's third realistic scenario. Realistic scenario number three. Now, this one's a little bit of a reach, but I'm going to explain why I think it's realistic. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers have pick 21. So it'd be a 3-spot jump, not a huge jump, but a 3-spot jump. I'd have them giving up pick 83 in the third round. So they give up a third round pick, and the Seahawks would have to give back pick 172 in the fifth. Now, I could have, well, let me explain. So what that works out to, again, the Seahawks move back 3 spots, plus they give up pick 172 in the fifth round. They get back picks 21. And they get a third round pick, pick 83. This would be a 52-point surplus for the Seahawks. That's a huge surplus. Now, why would I say that's realistic? Granted, the Lions, the Cowboys got a 124-point surplus from the Lions last year to move up when they wanted Terrion Arnold. Okay, so it's not like this is crazy. I'm not saying it's a 300-point surplus, 52 points. But why do I think that that's potential that they could get a third-round pick for moving back 3 spots when I said they could only get a fourth-round pick for moving back 2 spots? The reason is the Steelers have a quarterback issue. And the one position where teams will likely overpay to move up would be if there's a quarterback that they like. And if the Steelers, if they're a Jalen Milroe team, if they're a Jackson Dart team, if maybe the unlikely is possible and Shedeur Sanders falls, if one of those things starts to happen, the Steelers could be a team that might be aggressive in trying to move up. I don't know that they'd move up way into the first round, but when you're just 3 picks away, I think they could be very tempted to move up and get their guy, especially they might think the Seahawks are interested in taking one of those guys. So in this case, the Seahawks just move back 3 spots and they pick up a third round pick. All they have to give up is a late fifth round pick. This would give them, again, a 52-point surplus for making that move. I don't think that's crazy for a quarterback if that's what Pittsburgh wants to do. That's the most lopsided deal of the ones I'm going to share. The last two, Lions. Lions moved up last year. They've been aggressive in the past. They might be aggressive again. I wanted to give you a couple of examples of bigger drops. So the Lions have pick 28 near the end of the first round. This would be a 10-spot drop from 18 to 28 for the Seahawks. What would they need in order to make that worthwhile? I'd have the Lions giving up their third-round pick, 102. It's late in the third round. But in order for this to make sense, I have the Lions giving up a 2026 second-round pick. All right? Picks 28, 102, which is a third-round pick, and a future second-round pick in order to move up 10 spots, and the Seahawks would return also pick 172 in the fifth. This would give the Seahawks a 21.9 surplus, so a pretty equal trade. And I think a logical one, but again, the big payoff would be the second round pick next year. You'd be moving back 10 spots to just get pick 102, which is the last pick of the third round this year. It's essentially a fourth round pick. So I don't know if I love this trade for the Seahawks this year, but I don't know if I hate it either. If that gets you Donovan Jackson with your first pick, and then you can move around with that third round pick you get picked up and you get a second next year, that could be incredibly valuable. Second round picks are not easy to come by. So that's another, the fifth of the six realistic trade scenarios. Final one, Chiefs. Chiefs move up from pick 31 to pick 18. This is the biggest move I've shared. And in this case, the Seahawks get a second round pick. They get pick 63. The Chiefs give up pick 31 and pick 63. Plus, they give up a future fourth round pick in 2026. And if they do that and the Seahawks just give up pick 18, it's a pretty equal deal. 5.8 point surplus for the Seahawks. So in that case, picks 31, 63, the second round pick, and a future fourth for pick 18. I'm curious if anyone's tempted. That's the only trade that I've got here that really involves a current second round pick. Now, this doesn't mean these are the only realistic trades. These are just some of the trades that I think fall into the realistic bucket. But I'll share my screen. It's not going to be the prettiest thing you've ever seen. But let me share with you guys what I'm looking at so you can see the same thing. And I'm going to put a poll out since we enjoyed that last time. I'll put a poll out and you guys tell me which of these you like best. Where does it go? Okay. So you can see here, these are the trades that I've talked about as realistic. And I'm going to create a poll in chat for folks that are on YouTube. And let me go ahead and number these. We'll call this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And there you go. All right. So I'm going to put a poll in. And you guys let me know, which one do you like best? All right. And we're going to do one, two. Three, four. Oh, no, only lets me do four choices in the poll, unfortunately. That stinks. But you guys can, I'm going to pick maybe my favorites here. Six. All right, six and one, two, three. Let's do one, two, four, six. All right, poll started. I'm giving you four choices there. You guys can pick others. Do separate polls, three each. All right, let's do this. Let's do this. I'm going to end this poll. All right, we're going to do a little bit of a tournament. March Madness time, why not? Which trade do you like best? And we'll do one, two, three. All right. And we're going to start that one. And then we're going to do another poll, and we're going to do, I got to do that afterwards, I guess. So we're going to do one, two, three first. I'll leave this open for a little bit. Right now, trade one is leading. We've got 10 votes in there. Trade one is leading. This is the trade for the Chargers pick. This is trading from 18 to 22 and picking up a third round pick. Okay. All right. Let's see where we're at here. Okay. Trade one really looks like it's winning. So trade one moves on to the next round of this tournament. Now we're going to do the last three. Which trade do you like best? And we'll do trades three, four, oh wait, sorry, four, five, and six. And I realize this isn't a perfect way to do it, but it doesn't really matter. We're just gonna have some fun. Okay, so trade one has moved on to the next round, to the championship round. And now we are looking at trades four, five, and six. Right now, early voting, trade four, the Steelers trade is very popular. Interesting. I'll leave this poll open for a few more moments. It looks, well, trade six is starting to make a comeback here. It's getting close. Trade six is the Chiefs trade, all the way down to getting a second round pick for moving down to pick 31. 45% in favor of trade four, which is the Steelers trade. Right now, that is winning, so we're going to call it over. And we're going to do the championship contest here. Okay, a final poll. Which trade do you like better? And we're going to say trade one or trade four. Make sure I got that right. Yep, trade one or trade four. All right, final poll. What are we going to get? Trade one or trade four? Trade one, for people that are listening and not watching. Trade one is trading back from pick 18 to pick 22. With the Chargers and getting a third round pick. Now you have to give up a fifth round pick, pick 172, but you get a third round pick, 86. Trade four is the trade with the Steelers, where you move back three spots and you get a third round pick, pick 83, but again, you have to give up pick 172. So It is a landslide. A landslide. Trade four with the Steelers is what people like best. Moving back three spots and getting a third round pick versus moving back four spots and getting a third round pick. Not a shock. Not a shock that they like that one better. And again, it's also a higher third round pick. Pick 83 versus pick 86. So not a surprise there. It's just an IQ test a little bit, and you guys passed. So, you know, I didn't want to sway the voters. Of all these deals, the ones that are probably most appealing to me are the ones where you're talking about adding another third round pick. But I'll tell you what, that Chiefs deal is pretty tempting. The Chiefs deal is pretty tempting. To get a second round pick, to get the 63rd overall pick is incredibly valuable. And I'm not sure that the difference between a guy at 18 and a guy at 31 is going to be worth that difference. So let's do this. Let's do a mock draft with this in mind. Let me see if this is going to. I want to make sure this one allows me to do the trade that I want to do. Okay. I'm going to do a mock draft with these trades. We're going to do the most extreme here. We're going to do the Chiefs Seahawks deal. 31 and 63. Future fourth for the Seahawks, pick 18. Trade accepted. Done. Okay. Here we go. Let me share my screen. All right. Let's start the draft. And let's see what we would have missed at 18. Okay. So in this case, Will Campbell. Now, if Will Campbell was there, I don't know if John Schneider would move back. But I did this before the draft just to like kind of take it out of the realm. Jihad Campbell, Tet McMillan, Shamar Stewart, Nick Emenwori, Colston Loveland. These are all big names. These are all big names that you're passing on. So it's a lot. It is like, I don't think Will Campbell realistically, I don't know. I don't think that's realistic that he's going to slip that far, but okay. But now you're at 31 and guess who's available? In this case, Kelvin Banks is available. In this case, Donovan Jackson's available. And I don't think that's crazy, guys. I really don't. And in fact, I'm going to take Donovan Jackson, even though I think Kelvin Banks is maybe the higher upside player. I think this is a good example of what do you get for having added that additional pick. So I am going to, in this case, I'm going to make another trade. And I'm going to trade pick 50. And let's see if pick 92 to move up in the second round. Let's move up to see like pick 39. Let's see if we can get. I'm going to do trade value chart here in real time. Pick 39 is worth 510 points. 510 points. Pick 50 is worth 400 points. So you need 110 points of value. I think I said 92. Okay, so 92 is a little bit more than necessary, but let's just do it to kind of make it. Pick 92 is worth 132. So I'm probably overthinking this, but I like to be a little bit accurate. I'm going to see if Chicago's got a later round pick that they can add. We'll take their 148th pick in the fifth. Okay, so we're going to go with the Bears, and we're going to get pick 39 and pick 148. Okay. All right, I wanted to do that before I did this because I've got it going so quickly. All right, so I've moved around the board a little bit with the extra picks. So now I picked Donovan Jackson, and then I'm back up at pick 39 because I used one of these picks like to help move around the board. So now we're at 39. If you love Jackson Dart, you can get him here. If you love Luther Burden, I mean, he might be the best receiver option the Seahawks could get. And I think it's realistic he could slip to this part of the second. Siobhan Revelle, the corner, that's really interesting. Available here. Benjamin Morrison, corner, available here. A lot of interesting names. So we've taken Donovan Jackson. You kind of get the pick of the litter here at the top of the second round. And you still have pick 52 and pick 63. Okay. So in this case, sure, I'm not going to do quarterback. It's probably like what the Seahawks would do here. I'm not going to do quarterback. I'm going to take Luther Burden. I think he's an excellent receiver. I think he's a first round talent. If Josh Simmons was there, I would take him. I don't think that's realistic at all. I am not a huge Donovan Ezeraku fan. He had like obviously great production. I just didn't love what I saw in 1v1s. I'm not bought on him. I'm tempted to take Siobhan Revelle, the corner. In fact, let's do that. We have not taken him yet. I think corner has maybe a bigger potential upside impact. Let's do that. So now we're back on the clock at 52. We've taken a corner. Now we could take another offensive lineman, but I'm going to take one of my favorite receivers here, Jack Besh, guy that I mentioned yesterday, I think can take the Seahawks from good to great. 63. We're still here. Jackson Dart's still there. I'm just ignoring him because I don't think that's realistic at this point. And at this point, I'm looking at Mason Taylor, Elijah Arroyo, Tate Ratledge, Jalen Knoll. All interesting names at this point in the draft. We've already taken one guard. We've taken a cornerback. We've taken a receiver. I think tight end's the move here. And I'm going to go with a guy I've increasingly been taking, Mason Taylor. Although I haven't taken Elijah Arroyo for a while. Let's take Elijah Arroyo. Add some needed speed to that group. All right. So we've now taken Elijah Arroyo and Jack Besh. Now we're back on the clock at pick 82. And at this point, a name like Jalen Milroe could start to be appealing. You've got a lot of picks. Maybe you take a flyer on him. Cam Scataboo. Interesting player to add to your class. Demetrius Knight, Andrew Makuba, Savion Williams, who we know that they've had meetings with, Charles Grant, Kevin Winston Jr. So when I look at who we have taken, unfortunately, this sim does not let me just remind myself by clicking on my team. So we've taken Donovan Jackson. We've taken Siobhan Revelle, also guard, cornerback. We've then gone tight end, guard, cornerback, tight end. And now we're sitting here on the clock. Guard, cornerback, tight end. I mean, I know what I would do here. I'm not sure this is what John... I would take Jared Wilson here. And in fact, why don't we do that? Why don't we do that? Guard, cornerback, tight end. Tempted to take a safety here, but I'm going to. Oh, I forgot. So we got rid of our other third round pick, but now we're here in the fourth round. We've taken tight end. Tyler Shuck's sitting there. I don't think that's a bad pick. Devin Neal would be a really interesting pick. Kyle McCord's there. Kyle Williams. That's pretty appealing to me. Chase Lunt. A lot of interesting names here. So at this point, I'm going to go a little bit of a different direction. Tough call here. Is Clay Webb still there? He is. I like Clay Webb better than some of these other names. Let's go with Jalen Reed. Add to the safety room. Then we're back on the clock. We're going to take Jalen Travis here. And then we are here in the last part of the fifth round. I mean, Chase Lunt's the best player, probably. Jackson Slater's really appealing. Kyle McCord's interesting. I'm going to take Clay Webb here. And then I'm going to take Willie Lampkin. I mean, I'll take Jalen Conyers just for a little different. Jack Kaiser's still there. Let's take Jack Kaiser. Get all the way to the seventh round. Key Robinson's an interesting edge player. Jaden Blue, easy choice. And then last pick. I think this is our last pick. We'll take Upton Stout. Add to the corner room. Here's what we end up with. Again, you can kind of tell it's a little hard to keep track on who you picked when you're doing the deal. So this was a way to kind of get a feel for what it would be like if you traded all the way back to 31 and you did what was essentially a realistic move. You end up with Donovan Jackson, Siobhan Revelle Jr., the corner, Jack Besh, the receiver, Elijah Arroyo, tight end, Jared Wilson, the center, Jalen Reed, the safety, Jalen Travis, the tackle, Clay Webb, the guard. So you get a couple guards and a tackle and a center. Jack Kaiser, linebacker, Jaden Blue, running back, Upton Stout. I don't hate it. I don't hate it. I might have made some different picks if I could have looked back and forth a little bit more easily. But what this draft does is you've definitely attacked the offensive line. I think you've got one of the highest upside corners in the class. You've got a receiver who I think is just a tone setter, especially as a blocker and as a downfield contested catcher. You've got one of the most explosive athletes at tight end. And I think a promising safety and a really good coverage backer. And then Jaden Blue in the seventh is a crazy steal. That guy is electric. So I don't hate it. But I think we'll play with this a little bit. We'll play with this a little bit and make some of these trades. Now that we've got some realistic trades, I will start doing this in some of our mocks so we have a feel for like what we could realistically end up with. All right. There are a couple super chats. Let me get to those. Ben Kaspersian says it was also well shy of where Smith's camp wanted to be an average per year. Yes, the money was different, Brian. Anyway, here's $5. Keep it up. That is part of the article, but the article also says the compensation didn't end up being that different. So take two and two. The offers were not significantly different. I have very solid, reliable information that the money between the two deals is not that different. The difference between the two deals with Geno Smith in Vegas and Geno Smith in Seattle was the guaranteed money. And I think it was essentially $18.5 million more because the Seahawks weren't going to guarantee into year two. That's what I said when the details of the deal came out in the first place. So it wasn't an APY situation. It wasn't a total money situation. It was a guaranteed money situation. And part of that guaranteed was not just the money, because the Seahawks have definitely played guys into the second year of their deals, like they did with Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf and other guys. But from Geno Smith's perspective, it was a disconnect on the future and whether he was going to be part of it. And they just didn't feel like the Seahawks were committed to him the way he wanted them to be. So that's my read on it. Ben says, just kidding. Left my ass off. I was wrong. Okay. Okay. I appreciate that. I respect it. I appreciate you paying to say that. I always love it when people say I was wrong. More people in the world need to say I was wrong. I try to do it as often as I can. Being wrong is so underrated. If you were right about everything, life is so boring. Being wrong, having the unexpected, learning something, come on. That's the good stuff. So I will always try my best to admit when I'm wrong. Sometimes I'll have a harder time with it than others, but being able to admit you're wrong just means that you aren't a baby. Like, people are wrong all the time. Lots of examples of that. So appreciate all of you who tuned in this morning. If you haven't given the show a like, click subscribe, please do. Give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you go. And if you want ad-free audio of this show, all you got to do is sign up at patreon.com/hawkblogger. I'll get you on there. Also, there's still a crazy deal going on. If you don't know about it, use code HawkBlogger over at jkboots.com. Get the best pair of boots you'll ever own. Handmade. Takes some weeks to make these boots. They are gorgeous. And you get $75 off. Use code HawkBlogger. $75 off. Not only that, but for everyone that uses code HawkBlogger to buy these boots, you get $75 off, and JK Boots will gift, let me try that again. And JK Boots will donate $15 to the Wildland Firefighters Foundation, who helps our Northwest Forest firefighters protect our Northwest forests. So you do something, you get something for yourself or for a friend or for a family member, and you give back to Northwest Forests, and you save $75. It is a screaming deal. Use code HawkBlogger. You will love them. I love my JK boots. I wear them any chance I get, and they're amazing. So family-owned company in Spokane, by the way. Support local business. So, all right, folks, I'm going to let you go there. My son didn't wake up, so I didn't have to interrupt it. Yay. Now I can go work out and eat, and I'm going to take my son and his girlfriend to see the Minecraft movie. If that is not a committed father, I don't know what is. God help me. Hopefully I stay awake during that movie, or who knows. I will see you all tomorrow, 10 a.m. Dane Brugler of The Athletic, the writer of The Beast, the best draft analyst out there, will be back on with me. So tune in tomorrow. I will see you then. Until then, I'm Brian Nemezer. This has been another episode of HawkBlogger Mornings. Take care.